You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug DeFeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug DeFeller. And you know, boy, what a happy way to start the show. I was just listening to our producer's favorite music there, Charlie Bird. I'm telling him, why doesn't he do a show with just that kind of jazz? He's saying, well, when he gets time, you know, I've heard that before. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk a little bit about setting some goals and getting some action around them and accomplishing some of those things that we all talk about doing when we get time. So far, I don't know how you get time. No one's ever sent me a box of it, but boy, I could use it if anybody's got it out there. Hey, before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Frangie, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows. They air every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. right here live on octalkradio.net. That is talk radio, so if you want to give us a complete shock, call in, complain, participate, agree. Hey, we'd love to hear from you. The call-in numbers are area code 949-713-6443 or 6447. That's 949-713-6443. Hey, and if you're listening to this on a podcast, don't call. This is only, you can only call when we're live, which is Thursday, 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Hey, today we're going to be talking about a number of topics. We're going to talk a little bit about setting goals. We're going to talk some about benchmarking and some other just sort of miscellaneous coaching tips that I thought I'd like to share with you today. You know, we have been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years here in Orange County, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Helping to create more effective teams is our primary focus. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. In all cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual members. We also offer, in addition to our team coaching, individual coaching from the top executive to the newest entry-level position, coaching for people who want to sharpen their business skills. And we do a variety of workshops on communication, time management, and advisory boards. I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice. I'm a master certified coach, a past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation. And my coaching training was done through CTI, the Coaches Training Institute. So, hey, I hope that some of you found a chance to participate in the Orange County chapter's Coaching Day a week ago. I mean, what a great day full of wonderful speakers. If you missed it, well, hey, try catching one of their monthly meetings. That's all I can tell you because the full day program is just once a year. You know, I had occasion this morning to participate on a webinar with Bill Bonsetter. Bill is the founder of Target Training International, TTI, for those of you who know it, and one of the founders of the DISC report. And, you know, Bill was talking about benchmarking, job benchmarking. And you know, they have some great tools at TTI that really can be extremely helpful in your recruiting and in your screening. Whether you want to use their tools to make yourself more effective or whether you want to contract with them to have them do some of the preliminary work, either way works for them, and either way they do an excellent job. We've had occasion here at the Coaching Perspective to work with our clients to help them use some of the DISC reports to help screen candidates and do some of the preliminary screening. And to also do some of the benchmarking. Hold on a second there. Needed to take a sip of water there. Always feel guilty doing that, you know, but I was listening to somebody the other day, and it was early in the morning. There was a time change, and I was dying for my coffee, but I didn't have time to get it because I wanted to listen to this webinar. And while the guy's talking, I can hear him pouring the coffee. I could practically smell it coming across the airwaves. So I'm going, okay, I guess it's okay, you know, I guess the social protocol is if you're on the air, you can take a drink occasionally. Well, look, let's get back to what we're talking about here with benchmarking. You know, whether you're talking about a technical position, whether you're talking about an entry-level position, or whether you're talking about the CEO of the firm, there's a number of things that are in common that you need to do that can really help you be more effective in your recruiting efforts. Job benchmarking is one of those things. Now, in my mind, one of the things that's missing in most discussions about job benchmarking is what should happen before you benchmark the job, and that is determining whether, in fact, that job is really necessary. We start in job benchmarking with the assumption that the job's necessary, but, you know, in this day and age, we have found through the tough economy that we've been going through that most of us have found a way to get by with a lot fewer people and still do just as good a job. So I would suggest that one of the first steps in job benchmarking is to really look at the job and evaluate, do I need to fill this position? Maybe somebody retired or quit or you had to replace them, but do you really need to fill the position? And is the position the way in which it was being done before, the way in which you would like to have it done in the future? Should you change the job description? Should you combine it with some other position? Should the work be reassigned? Should this work be contracted out rather than be done in-house with your own employee? But that's kind of the first step, I think, that you really need to take in job benchmarking is really sort of reevaluate. Is it necessary for us to fill this position? And is the position the same as it was before? I mean, many times we find that, hey, you may have lost a great employee who had been doing a wonderful job for you for years in that position, and therefore you never really paid much attention to the position because it always went so smooth. It was sort of like, you know, I'm only going to work on those things that are going wrong. I don't pay any attention to those things that are going right. And now all of a sudden you've got the opportunity because of this turnover to look at it and you go, hey, wait a minute, I don't need this position, or half of what was being done in this position doesn't need to be done or can be reassigned or is being duplicated by somebody else. So it is an opportunity to take a look at the job and decide whether in fact you really do need to fill it and whether you need the job is the same. So all right, let's assume that you've decided you do need to fill the job. Then what job benchmarking is all about? It is the flip side of interviewing candidates. In other words, when we interview a candidate for a job, we are trying to find out whether they fit the criteria that we have. Job benchmarking is interviewing the job to find out what the candidate should look like, what the applicant, what the person I'm going to hire to fill this position should look like. What skills do they need? What experience do they need? And so forth. So job benchmarking is all about interviewing the job to determine what is needed. Now, you know, if you're in a small company, maybe it's just a matter of you sitting down and figuring out what needs to be done. Or maybe it's a matter of you talking to the person who's leaving the job, talking to the people who fed data into this position, the people who were on the receiving end of the activities of this position, and sort of accumulate all that information and get a clear picture of what does the job really require. It was kind of interesting to me. One of the things that that Bill shared with us this morning is the fact that 1/3 of all applicants today are applying for more than 50 jobs. 1/3 of all applicants that you're going to probably get and receive have also got applications pending at 49 other places. Wow. You know, what that tells me is that we need to get real efficient about our preliminary screening so that we can sort through the multitude of applications that we've got and get down to those that we really want so that we can be responsive to those applications. We can jump on the ones that are qualified and take advantage of their availability in the marketplace. You know, the key thing we need to do initially is we need to really identify who are the people that are totally unqualified. Who are the people that are looking for any kind of job but haven't really identified what it is they want? Who are those people that are so desperate that they're willing to take jobs that they don't have the skills for, don't have the aptitude for, have no interest in, and frankly, it doesn't provide them with their, meet their economic needs, but they're so desperate they'll take anything for the short term? That's not what we're looking for. So in benchmarking, you want to identify those things that will help you screen out those applications that you're going to get before you ever get into the position of really bringing people in and talking to them. You want to look very carefully at the things that the job says, I've got to have. In other words, if you're interviewing the job, what does it say the person needs to be accountable for? And, you know, what skills are needed? What's the knowledge that's needed? What are the behaviors, the motivators, the experience, the intelligence? What are those basic things that the job is going to tell you that you have to have? The other thing that you have to look at is very carefully is that you have to look at what your biases are. In other words, most of us have biases about who we're going to hire. I mean, it's the old story. Malcolm Gladwell wrote about it in Blink, that we see somebody in nanoseconds. We've created an instant impression of whether we like them, don't like them, think they're qualified or don't think they're qualified. So what are those biases that we have that have nothing to do with a person's ability to do the job? Now, I'm not talking biases that are valid. In other words, I'm looking to hire somebody, let's say, that is going to be doing a lot of work on the phone. So I have a bias towards picking someone who's got a very pleasant voice, very easy to listen to, very clear diction. You know, that's a valid bias. The kind of invalid bias might be that somebody who dresses neatly, well, they're going to be spending a lot of time on the phone. What does dresses neatly have to do with that? So part of your benchmarking there is to identify what those biases are and to eliminate them. To look at what really are the behaviors that you're going to look for this applicant to have? And Bill talked about a long list of behaviors that they have a great tool that goes through and assesses people as to where their strengths lie in these 15 or 20 different behavioral categories. And then identifies what are the top five or six, which is really probably all that you can expect in terms of a best matching kind of thing. And the kinds of things they throw into job behaviors are customer orientation, you know, competitiveness, analysis of data, organized workplace, ability to follow up and follow through, customer relations, people who follow policies and rules and regulations. So you're going to look and see, you know, of all of those things, which are the ones that are critical for this particular position. Now, one of the mistakes that we frequently make in benchmarking and looking to hire somebody is we have a tendency to look for the perfect person. Guess what? They aren't there. You and I already have a job. No, perfect people aren't there. So what you're looking for is you're looking for people who have the basic skills that you want. And it isn't just a matter of whether they have them or don't have them. I mean, some people have a lot of experience or mastery in skills. Some people have some ability to exercise these skills most of the time. And some people have absolutely no clue about how to handle some of these skills. So you want to look at some of these things and see what whether they're important. I mean, conceptual thinking. If I'm hiring somebody that's going to be involved in writing procedures, if they're going to be developing new product lines, if they're going to be looking for new forms of distribution, designing new compensation systems, conceptual thinking might be very important. But if I'm hiring them to be the the lead foreman on the shipping dock, then that might not be important at all. So there's a long list of things that you can put together to identify here in terms of skills. Their creativity, their customer focus, their empathy, their self-management, how they work in a team, how they do their leadership skills, their negotiating skills. All of these things are things that you should identify what is required by the job before you start looking at whether the candidate, in fact, you know, has those skills or not. One of the things that Bill really surprised me about when that he mentioned that TTI looks for when they are assisting a company in developing or in benchmarking or in filling positions is what they called was the hiring manager's deal breaker. What are the things, whether they're legal or not legal, that would prevent you from hiring somebody? You know, I mean, these could be biases or they could, you know, either valid or invalid. So a deal breaker could be, I'm not going to hire anybody short, or I'm not going to hire anybody tall, totally illegal, but that might be the position that you're taking and looking to hire someone. And if that's where you're at, then you ought to at least know that and identify it up front and face it. And decide that's either a ridiculous position to take, it's not a legal position to take, and therefore I'm going to avoid that bias. Or there could be deal breakers that I'm just not going to take anybody that doesn't have advanced educational degrees because, or let's say professional designation degrees, the CPA certificate, architectural license, an engineering certificate. I'm not going to hire them if they don't have those certifications, because that's part of what our firm offers. That's part of what our marketing is all about, is that we are a firm with a high percentage of people that have those kinds of certifications. So you want to identify what are the deal breakers, because if you can identify those up front, that's going to help you in your preliminary screening. It's going to help you when you get those stacks of resumes on your desk. You're looking for the deal breakers in there, and you don't even need to talk to those people or go any further. You know, there was a whole lot of things that Bill talked about, but I'm just going to kind of wrap this up before we go to commercial with the fact that I was really surprised, but it made a whole lot of sense that Bill said part of job benchmarking is what do you do after you have the person? Do you have your onboarding program ready right now to help them so that their first day becomes a productive day? You know, have you developed a personalized plan for their training and assimilation into your culture and into your staff? Have you developed a personalized managing or coaching or mentoring program, you know? And he talked about the fact that are you offering them job-related coaching? And he said, you know, what job-related coaching is this is coaching that is targeted to those things that are necessary for the person to perform their job satisfactorily. And are you giving them the training in those exact specific areas that they need it? Too many times as companies, we provide a communication seminar or management training that is very broad, it's very interesting, it may be good, but it isn't exactly what somebody needs. Maybe they don't need a communication seminar. Maybe they need coaching on how to deal over the phone, how to listen to people's tone of voice, how to listen to the pauses, how to get the most out of conversation when they can't see the person. So there's unique communication skills that they needed to be coached or mentored in. So those are some of the things that Bill talked about today. It was a fascinating conversation, and I would highly recommend that you look to TTI and evaluate some of their tools, particularly in the area of job benchmarking. And before we leave TTI completely, when we come back from the break, I want to give you a couple of websites to go to that I think would be very helpful for you. But let me turn it over to our producer.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Okay, well, we were talking about job benchmarking, which is all about the kind of hiring process. And I just want to refer you to a couple of blogs that actually were from TTI, Target Training International, that I thought were extremely helpful. One of them right on target with what we're talking about, and it was written by Ashley Bowers. And if you want to go to this exact blog, it's http://ttiassessments.com/blogs/26. So that's TTI Assessments, Target Training International Assessments. The title of this particular blog was Owner Rent. Do your employees have an ownership mentality? And the point that was being made is that at any one point in time, our staffs are made up of some renters and some owners. Renters meaning that these are people that either you have an attitude that you can give them notice or evict them at any time, or they have an attitude that says they're always looking for a better place to move to that doesn't need painting or touching up or fixing, that they're only in it for the good times, that they're not in it for long term. Whereas the owners on our staff tend to be involved and more present in the everyday working of the business in addition to the strategic vision, that they're interested in seeing where the company is going. How do they fit in? How's the organizational goals being met? Okay. These are really key. And the question is, in your interviewing process, how would you identify the difference between an owner and a renter? Well, in this blog, they gave five great pieces of advice, five great questions that I just want to share with you that I think are really worth thinking about adding to your interviewing process to identify whether you're hiring an owner or a renter. So if you're interviewing an owner, you want to ask the first question is, what goal would you have for yourself in this position if you were to join our team? You know, you're putting the person in the place of, are they thinking beyond the salary, the hours, and the benefits? Second question is, why is it important for you to join our organization? The third is, what is it about this position in our organization that intrigues you the most? And the fourth, what are you reading or learning about that you can immediately apply to this position and our customers? And what questions do you have for me? You know, I thought those were the fifth was kind of a throwaway. I think that's sort of a standard. If you're any good at interviewing, you're going to ask the applicant what questions they have for you. But I think in terms of following these other four questions first with that, you tend to focus them on the more strategic parts of the job and the company and how they would fit in. And I think that could be extremely helpful. Well, you know, while I was looking at that, there was another blog that had been written that was talking about making meetings more profitable. You know, and there was a statistic I just wanted to share. It said the average business professional attends at least 7 meetings per week that last on average 2 hours and 45 minutes. Tie up 4 or 5 coworkers, which totals to almost 100 working hours a week. And, of course, what this leads us to is how effective are your meetings? You know, and how many times have we been to seminars and had discussions about whether our meetings are really effective or not? And you know, if you're in our HR audience, you can be listening to this about your corporate meetings. If you're in our coaching audience, I think, you know, the same thing applies to our coaching conversations and our coaching meetings. whether they're group coaching or whether it's one-on-one coaching, is, you know, are we doing as a coach everything we need to do to show up to deliver superior service to our clients? Some of the tips that they give for this is, one is pre-meeting preparation. Now, you know, their comment is this preparation starts hours in advance with a good night's sleep. Brain fuel is needed for critical thinking. Have 2 ounces of protein for breakfast. And then, of course, review the notes and readings prior to the meeting to sort of trigger the necessary protein markers. So we're talking about getting the brain ready to engage, not just showing up dressed and on time, but are we engaged for that client? Are we pre-engaged so that we're engaged for that client? Are we coming to that coaching session with the right attitude? Are we coming with a positive state of mind? Are we really thinking about the last conversation? You know, I don't know any good coaches that don't take notes of their coaching sessions. Some do it during the sessions. Many do it after the sessions. But whichever way that works for you, I find it's extremely helpful to review those notes, not just for the facts, but also to sort of stir up the emotions that existed in the last conversation that you had with the client. And you know, make sure that you're using those notes. Make sure that you are putting down things that are just worth remembering. In other words, note-taking is not about taking dictation. It's not about recording the conversation. It's about recording the critical parts of the conversation. You know, it's sort of like creating sticky notes for your brain, things that will trigger emotions that you and the client experienced in the coaching, because those emotions, when we tie emotions to facts, then we create memories. So you want to be thinking about that. The other thing is, just as a sort of a side issue here, is in your note-taking, is all of the research shows that images are much more powerful than words for remembering. So, you know, I like to use mind mapping. I find that I can sit down and mind map out a conversation, and I record a lot more. I have a lot better recall of what went on, and later on when I review that mind map, I get a lot more out of what went on in the conversation in terms of remembering it than I do out of just looking at written notes. One of the things is be careful that your note-taking isn't distracting you from really truly listening, okay? Be careful that you're not taking away from your listen ability by preparing for what you're going to say to something. If the client has said something that you feel you got to give them a response, but you don't want to interject it now, ask them to hold on for a minute while you jot down a couple of key words that'll help you remember what you want to ask them, and then let them go back on and finish their thought, kind of thing. And after the meeting, are you leaving some time to think about what you did? You know, for me, it's a great temptation when you're coaching on the phone to schedule back-to-back meetings. You know, I mean, I look at my calendar and I go, gee whiz, I've got a half hour between those calls. You add that up during the day, I could have handled 3 or 4 more clients. And really, those are not wasted time. That is time. You know, that half hour gives me 10 or 15 minutes to think about what just went on with the client, to document what went on so that I can, my notes are in good shape for the next time, to make, jot some things down to ask in the next session, maybe to drop them an email or send them some information that I promised them in our coaching session, and then another 10 or 15 minutes to review the notes for the next client and get ready for the next one. So you need some time in between. If I'm doing one-on-one coaching, I mean, boy, it is great to walk out of the client's office and sit in the parking lot and pull my notes together then before I fire up the engine and drive on to the next coaching call. So you might want to look at making sure that your schedule does that. I can tell you from personal experience, and this is supported with a lot of research, but my own personal experience is the longer I wait to make my notes, the less I have to write about, the less recall I have about what went on. Notes need to be made today. Tomorrow, hey, we're talking faint memories, really, about what went on. So those were some kind of interesting things. You know, one of the things that it kind of brings up for both of us in the coaching and in the HR field is, you know, what system are you using to keep up to date on the fascinating blogs that are out there? You know, there's a whole lot of blogs. I mean, there's a, I can't think of the number now, but there's more blogs than any of us have time to read. There's a whole lot of blogs that aren't worth reading. There's a whole lot of blogs that aren't worth looking at. But once you find somebody who really, on an ongoing basis, writes great informational blogs that you want to read, what is your system to make sure that you go back and you keep up to date on their blogs? Do they have a RSS feed that you can link to so that you're automatically notified in your email? Do you have some kind of dashboard where you can daily go there and find summary postings of blogs? Hey, I'd be fascinated to know what you're using. If you want to drop us a line at DGefeller at criticalmassforbusiness.com, that would be great. Or call us in, call in. So those are some of the things that that I kind of wanted to share with you there. You know, all of these things relate to not only coaching, but they relate to our business practice. My business partner and I have been putting together CEO peer groups here in Orange County, California for 18 years. The radio show is really just an extension of that practice in that we got to talk to and hear so many interesting people. We wanted to be able to share some of that information, and so that's how the radio shows got created. Rick and I are currently leading a number of CEO peer groups here in Orange County, and if you'd like to know more about our peer groups or about our coaching practice, I'd encourage you to check out our website, which is www.criticalmassforbusiness.com, or to listen to our radio shows here. So let's see. I'm expecting there's our producer jumping in with our next commercial here. So let me just, I'll come back to you in just a minute, and we'll talk about some goal setting.
If you are a Southern California business owner or executive, this message is for you. For over 17 years, Doug Gefeller has been coaching executives, helping them create and improve the effectiveness of teams and individual team members. What makes Doug's approach unique and successful is his fundamental approach. Doug looks at the coaching from the perspective of the client, not the coach. Doug has helped hundreds of companies and led over 1,000 planning meetings that have changed lives and the course of many successful firms throughout Southern California. If you're interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn about our executive coaching and team development. Critical Mass for Business is a professional executive coaching and team development company and is the fastest growing business advisory firm in Orange County.
If you are an Orange County business executive, this message is for you. Do you ever feel isolated with no place to turn for advice or feedback? Who holds you accountable to your commitments in your company? Where do you find the right resources to help you and your company grow? If you have these questions, then Critical Mass for Business might be the answer for you. Critical Mass for Business is committed to helping you make better decisions. These are groups of peers running businesses just like you, providing a great sounding board to test ideas and concepts, review plans and goals, and present issues and opportunities for discussion. The result is improved strategy, accountability, people, and execution skills. If you are interested in learning more, go to www.criticalmassforbusiness.com and learn more about our executive peer group.
Okay, we're back. This is Doug Gefeller talking to you on the coaching's perspective. And I just want to take a minute to acknowledge our great producer here. You know, what a job he's got. He never knows when I'm going to run out of breath and say, hey, throw a commercial in here. You you think it's all scripted out, but he's really very flexible about going along with me. And I'll tell you, I really appreciate it. Paul, you do a great job. And any of you out there that are thinking about doing your own radio show, octalkradio.net, that's where you need to be. Well, look, a couple of weeks ago, we talked on the show here about an annual event that that we hold or have been holding for 18 years as part of our Renaissance Executive Forums business. And what that is all about, for those of you who weren't on the show then, is we take 1 to 2 days, take our members and their spouses, and we go away and we do the same program every year in the sense that we call it Strategies for Success. And the idea is to look at your career and to look at your life and to identify the areas that are in conflict and the areas that are supporting each other and to sort of reevaluate it. You know, we spend a lot of hours looking at our business, but when was the last time you looked at your career? When was the last time you stepped back and said, you know, hey, what am I going to be when I grow up? Do I really want to grow up? The answer is no. But so that's what we did. And we had a great time. We had about 40 people participating in that. And it was a fantastic one. The thought process or the thought topics to spur the discussion this year revolved around Zappos. We had the privilege of having interviewed Tony Hsieh, and we talked about his book and happiness and what Zappos is doing. We talked about Walter Greene's book, talking about gratitude. This is the moment. And let's see, I'm going blank here. What was the other one that we talked about? Oh, how could you do this, Doug? Oh, we also talked about... I'll get it for you in just a second here. Boy, this is a little bit embarrassing. Ted Leonis, former vice chairman of AOL. And we talked about his life-changing events and where he's going. And all of these really related to the topic of happiness. Not because we're pushing happy juice here, but because, you know, there's scientific evidence that says that we are more productive and we are more creative when we are happy. And that applies to those of us who run the business, and that applies to those of us that work in our businesses. And so we had 2 days of great conversation, a very creative conversation, talking about how does happiness get expressed in the workplace? What is your company's culture? And is it what you want it to be? And is it conducive to accomplishing the goals of your company? And are you hiring the right people, people that fit into that culture? Now we could go back to our job benchmarking conversation we had earlier today, but that was kind of our topic for discussion, and we covered that a couple of weeks ago. If you're interested in hearing more about that, I think it was our February 9th coaching show. But what I wanted to talk about for a few minutes here today is the fact that for 18 years, we've been wrapping up these meetings with the same exercise every year. And it is a trademark of Renaissance Executive Forums. It's called Creating Your PAL and Your S-Cube. Now, your PAL is abbreviation or acronym for Personal or Professional Action List. And we have our members create both a personal action list and a professional action list. And then we have them create an S-Cube, which is three things that you want to stay, start, and stop. And when they're all done with that, we take that, we make little tiny printed cards about the size of your business card. We laminate them, and we give it to each one of our members. And I've been doing this for my coaching clients for just about as long as I've been doing it for our CEOs. And it is amazing the impact of carrying around these cards in your purse or your back pocket really have on accomplishing your goals. I know some people that you know, if you go to their office, they have the card propped up on their keyboard. If you look for them to pay the bill, it's in there with their credit cards. And every time they reach for the credit card, they're looking at it again. And those people accomplish their goals. They consistently accomplish them well before the end of the year. I know people who have done this exercise and put it away and never looked at it again until the end of the year when it came time to do a new one, and they pulled out the old one. And guess what? They accomplished their goals also. There's something about the process of thinking about this and then converting that thinking in a written exercise to print and then reading it and sharing it with other people that really is going to take you a long ways towards accomplishing those things. You're still going to have to do the hard work, but it's really going to get you there. So I just wanted to share with you for a few minutes what we're really talking about there, because I think this is something that those of you listening, hey, take this, steal it, use it. I would encourage you to do it. Personal pal, professional pal. Okay, so what is the pal? The pal is three primary goals that you're going to focus on in the next 12 months. Not 10, not 15, not 20, but three primary goals. And we want you to pick three in your personal life and three in your professional life. So the personal life goals might be things like more time with the family, developing a hobby, getting my finances in shape, paying off my debt, whatever. The professional goals could be things like succession planning. We're going to get serious about it. It could be not working longer. But identify the three primary goals in each, your personal category and your professional category. And once you've identified what that is, write a paragraph sort of detailing it out, what you really mean, using positive affirmations as if you've already achieved that goal. So rather than saying, I want to do this, you write it in the format of, I have accomplished this. Next, you take and make a list of 10 steps that you have to take to accomplish that goal. Now, we don't put the 10 steps on the little business card because they don't fit. But you need, most all of our goals require 2 or 3 or 4, and we found 10 is kind of a good number. So we go, make 10 steps that you have to go through to achieve that goal. And just going through the exercise of listing the steps that are necessary. In other words, it's one thing to say that I have a goal to do something, but it's another thing to really lay out the steps that I'm going to have to really go through. So, you know, somebody in one of our groups said that they were going to get active in a nonprofit organization this year rather than just writing a check. That was one of their personal prioritized action items. And then they had to make a list of 10 things. Well, I need to make a list and research different nonprofits, and I need to visit the nonprofits and get some information on them, and I need to find out what roles they have open. I need to apply for it. So, you know, there were a number of steps to do that. That's how you create your pals. Now, we also ask that you do what we call our S-cube, which is really means that we want you to make for both your personal life and for your business life two separate lists. Each one of the lists includes three things that you want to stop doing, and these are sort of personal habits, three things that you want to start doing, and three things that you want to stay doing. These are things that you're currently doing that work well for you that you want to continue doing. So, you know, the kinds of things that you might have on a professional one is, or a personal one is, hey, you might want to continue eating healthy. You might want to continue your workout program. You might want to stop watching so much TV. You might want to stop setting unrealistic due dates for things. You might want to start visiting grandma more often. You might want to start thinking before you talk kind of thing. You know, you've got the idea. Stay, start, and stop. So I would really encourage you. I think of this as a gift I'm given to you because I have seen such great results from this exercise. I even hate to use the term exercise, but hey, it is. Think about it. Get a piece of paper. Write it out. Create those PALs, personal and business, and create those S cubes. And I'm telling you, you will be a lot further along than you've ever been before towards accomplishing your goals this year. Well, look, this has been a great time to chat with you. I appreciate you giving me the time to discuss these things. Let me just tell you again, we talked about Target Training International, and that's TTI.com. If you want to go there and find out more information about their assessment tools, or just look up Target Training International on Google. But, hey, I've enjoyed our conversation today. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And more importantly, I hope that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to make better, more informed decisions.